Now, I'm a proper nerd, but as our business grows, I hate having multiple apps to track different things, having to remember all these logins for everything. And from what we're learning from our listeners, this is a big problem that's really affecting productivity.
Let's be honest, shall we? Mars Tech is just far too complicated. My brain isn't built for it. And most tasks take twice as long because before you can even start, you've got to remember which app has the stuff you need. Was it Google Docs? Did we store it in Asana? Do we even still use Basecamp?
HubSpot has got a great platform that can really help you if you feel the same as us. There's no more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. There's no more chasing down like things like prospect information. And no more one system for this and one system for that.
Yep, if you and your teams are busy growing your business, then a HubSpot customer platform can help you find leads, reach prospects, and deliver the insights you need to convert them into customers all in one place. Oh, and the HubSpot AI can literally do more of your work for you, so you can focus more on scaling your business.
Visit HubSpot.com to learn how HubSpot's customer platform can help you grow your business.
The best teams had the highest degree of psychological safety, and the worst had the lowest level of psychological safety.
Hello, and welcome to the Truth, Lies, and Workplace Culture podcast. My name is Al, and I'm a business owner.
My name's Leanne. I'm a business psychologist.
And if you're a regular listener, or even if you're not, then this whole podcast you'll start to learn is all about taking the complex idea of people and workplace culture, which Leanne knows everything about because she's an amazing psychologist, and then we're trying to translate it so that you, the business owner or the leader, have got implementable ideas that you can basically walk away today and start doing some really good stuff in your workplace. Now, I want to ask you about this, Leanne, because I've seen quite a few posts recently, and it feels like there's this uprising in employees demanding a better workplace culture. Now, it could be just the Google algorithm because I do read these things, then I see more of them. It could be that there's more millennials in the workplace, so therefore they've got different standards that they're looking for. It could be that they're perhaps a bit more vocal than me, which is Gen X, I think I am, Gen Z, I can't remember. So it could be that I'm a bit more vocal, but I wanted to ask you, Leah, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you're Gen X.
Oh, I'm Gen X.
Yeah, I'm a millennial. Hi, guys. We're the ones that started the trouble. The Gen Zs are now picking up the baton. there is definitely a shift in expectations of employees at work because there's been massive shifts in the way we work, you know, in terms of technology and obviously massively accelerated by the pandemic. Expectations are different now. And, you know, the world of work is different as well, where there's, you know, the times of having a job that's safe for life isn't there anymore, as we've talked about recently with the Twitter layoffs. A safe pension isn't really a thing anymore. So quite rightly, you know, employees now are saying, well, you know, I'm giving you my time in return for good pay, benefits and a work-life balance. You don't have to like it, but yeah, it's changed.
It's so interesting because the power shift seems to have been now that before it was like you're lucky to get a job, and now it's almost like employees think you're lucky to get me, which is probably quite a good, quite an interesting shift and quite a good thing to be. Now, you've done some research around what makes a great workplace culture, and you found 7 foundations of well-being that makes a place a really good place to work. So will you talk us through those 7?
Yeah. So I think just to give it a little bit of context, when we look at kind of psychological research within organizations, there's lots of overlap between well-being, employee engagement, and culture. So what we want to do here at Oblong was create a very comprehensive tool that can capture all of those things that employers, business leaders have influence and power over. They can make changes in their business, but then they can also see the measurable impacts on employee attitudes, behavior, and performance. So yeah, there are 7 foundations within a business that will promote well-being, that will promote employee engagement and all the performance benefits that come with that. We've called it the RX7. And that's because our 7 areas all begin with R. And I was very excited when this turned out to be the case, completely accidentally.
To be honest, I think one of them I made you change to begin with R, but the rest of the other 6 did. I mean, I put the L in alliteration, I think. Yeah, anyway, shall we crack on with those 7 then?
Yeah. Shall I list the 7 first?
Yes, that's a good idea.
So we have reason, recognition, resources, role, relationships, resilience, and remote.
Lovely. So let's go through those seven. And just to reiterate, these are what we've found from our research, or Leanne's research, really. I've just written bits of it, is that they're the seven foundations to make an amazing workplace culture of employee engagement and performance.
And well-being.
And well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, reason, the first one. So this is really providing, and I like to start each of these kind of definitions with providing, because as a leader, I can provide this within the organization. It's not intangible. It's not, you know, how do we do this? I provide this as a leader. So reason, I provide leading engagement with a clear mission that not only I connect with and I'm excited about as a leader, but that my employees connect with, both on a professional and a personal level. So the second is recognition. That's providing an environment that's based on fairness, representation, and appreciation. The third is resources. That's providing manageable workloads, adequate training for people to do the job that they're currently in, and ongoing development opportunities as well. The fourth is role. So this is role clarity in terms of the current role. So what are my responsibilities? Clarity over future roles. Do I have a clear path within the organization or indeed externally to the organization? Freedom in work practices. So this isn't having to do everything exactly the same way all the time. I have some autonomy within my role. And then also just mutual respect between leaders and employees in terms of I have a role within this organization, and therefore I have some control over what that looks like. The fifth is relationships. So this is providing information and support to employees through yourself as a leader, through your managers, and harnessing and nurturing that support in peer relationships as well. Six is resilience. And this is really providing opportunities for employees to build their resilience and critically to, the time and space to emotionally and physically recover from work, particularly in frequently changing environments, which is basically just business today, right? And then finally, remote. So remote's interesting. And pre-pandemic, we were working with clients on employee engagement and wellbeing, and looking at remote work as something that we believed was driving employee engagement. So it's contributing to positive employee engagement and wellbeing within the business. What we've kind of found in our research post-pandemic, and this is early post-pandemic, so it might change, why we need to always keep an eye on these things. What we're finding is that employee engagement and well-being is affected by remote or hybrid work as a workplace arrangement, either negatively or positively, depending on the conditions within the organization as they currently are. So what it's basically saying is it's a moderating factor. So if your other six R's are doing really well, then more than likely remote work or hybrid work, whatever that looks like for you, is going to work really well because you've created this environment to facilitate remote work. Equally, if there are some kind of hotspot risk areas in your organization, then they're probably going to be related to certain struggles with remote work. So currently, we're finding that remote is a moderator of the previous six, but that is those are the seven foundations, and that is the RX7.
Definitely. Now, you'll be hearing, I'm sure, a lot more about that in the new year. I'm not going to give you any spoilers. But the whole point of this is, I think, that you get these things in place, and basically, as long as you do these seven things, or get these seven things scoring highly, you've got yourself a decent workplace culture. Now, I think what you said before was that you're talking about one of the most important beliefs, and that's why we've got our guest on today.
Yeah, so the important thing about looking at culture, employee engagement, well-being is to look at it as a predictive model and something that you can measure. So all of our sevens in our RX7, each of those can be measured and linked to a specific positive belief or behavior that employees might have about the organization. And that in turn is going to translate into individual benefits, such as well-being, performance, fulfillment, but also business benefits. Like I said before, you know, this has to be commercially sustainable as well. And what we found is that these positive behaviours and beliefs translate into higher revenue, higher profitability, and faster growth, to name a few.
So in short, you need this. If you want to scale, if you want to maybe exit, maybe you want to get investment, you need this.
Absolutely. And, you know, to kind of lead in and segue nicely into today's guest, one of the most important beliefs that can be held by employees in engaging work environment and that boosts well-being pretty much exponentially is something called psychological safety.
We brought in a guest called Stefan, who he will introduce himself in a second. And I'm deliberately not going to ask Leanne to define psychological safety or why we need it, because these are all the questions we ask Stefan. So let's meet Stefan.
My name is Stefan Wiedner, and I'm the CEO of Zarango.com. It is a training platform where we train folks in psychological safety. The original seed was there in business school. I really enjoyed organizational behavior, industrial organization, like those courses, the kind of HR culture related courses. And so I've been spending the last 15 years or plus in that area. So I started with coaching. We started, my business partner and I, we started up newme.com. It's a network of thousands of coaches all over the world. And more recently, started up Zarango.com for all of our psychological safety-based training.
So as I mentioned earlier, psychological safety is a belief held by employees in engaging and supportive workplace culture. But what is it exactly? And Stefan's actually got a really good clinical definition.
I'll start with the clinical definition, if you call it that. The one provided by Amy Edmondson. She's a Harvard professor. She's really the thought leader in this space. I'm sure I call myself an expert, but she's the real expert. And I'm just learning from her and others in the field. Her definition is that psychological safety is a belief that within your team, within your work environment, you can speak up, say what's on your mind, admit mistakes, and you can do all of that without any fear of some form of negative consequence. To make that a little more tangible in our training, what we say is that the definition for psychological safety is that you're trying to create a culture in which your people have the courage to speak up and the confidence to know that when they do speak up, they'll be heard.
Now, our Zoom recording there did break up a little bit when he said a really important thing, which was Amy Edmondson. Is that correct, Leanne?
Yeah, Amy Edmondson is a Harvard professor and a real pioneer and thought leader in psychological safety. And she did say, you know, there's so much reading. We're going to leave a link in the show notes that if you want to, you know, dive into her TED Talks, into her papers, it really is fascinating reading. But she, you know, summarized it by the, you know, psychological safety is a belief that the team is safe for interpersonal risk taking. Or in other words, that they just, you know, people feel empowered to question the status quo without that fear of being judged or embarrassed or punished. In its simplest terms, it's creating an adult to adult environment. And I think that's what we were kind of saying before, you know, it's that, you know, you should want me to work for you as much as I want, you know, to work for you. It's that adult to adult transaction. And, you know, as Stefan said, it's not just about allowing people to speak up. It's about doing something with that feedback. And it's by making sure that that employee voice translates into organizational action that you're going to get the most impact out of psychological safety, as Stefan explains.
And what we knew looking back was that all of the leaders that we were coaching wanting to improve their ability to lead their teams, inspire their teams, et cetera. Gosh, they're all really just trying to improve psychological safety. And we can measure that. And if we can measure it before and after, then we can point to something that says, hey, this is good evidence that the behaviors of this leader are changing and psychological safety is improving. And because we know psychological safety is linked to performance and high performance, then we can assert that this team is performing better.
So as Stefan says, again, we're talking about a predictive model. This is how the RX7 works. It's how any great employee engagement model or well-being model is going to work. In that, you know, if we understand the foundations, the drivers of employee engagement and the associated beliefs and behaviors, we're not only going to know where to make changes, but we can measure the impact of these changes too. As I said, from individual well-being to profitability and even happier customers.
Now, I'm always asking, how does this make a difference? It all sounds lovely, but how does it make a difference? Stefan's got an amazing example of how it made a difference at Google.
You need to pay attention to it because The main reason is that it's linked to high performance. So I mentioned that earlier. Google did a big study. Google, of course, they're about as data-driven as you can get. And they asked the question, what makes an effective team? Because they had ranked 180 Google teams. They knew the best teams and they knew the worst teams. And so they wanted to know what leads to teams being effective or not. And so they went around the halls of their campus and they asked senior leaders, executives, managers, all sorts of folks, what they think might matter when it comes to a team. And so they looked at team size, age, ethnicity, cultural diversity, you know, all of these different factors, and nothing correlated. Nothing correlated with the best teams and the worst teams. And so they went back to the academic research, came across the concept of psychological safety, applied that to their data set, and lo and behold, it was the driving factor. So it was the number one correlating factor with high performance and low performance, meaning the best teams had the highest degree of psychological safety and the worst teams had the lowest level of psychological safety. So that's why it matters.
Yeah, such a really interesting bit of research from Google. It's if you want to find out more, it's called Project Aristotle.
Cool.
Yeah, based off of the, I guess the idea of Aristotle that the sum is greater than its individual parts. But yeah, Google found that employees that felt psychologically safe were more likely to admit mistakes, more likely to collaborate with others, and also to take on new responsibilities and commercially bring in more revenue. Once you then add in the positive correlation of between psychological safety, or the positive relationship between psychological safety, employee retention, satisfaction, resilience, and performance, creating psychologically safe environments, it's kind of a no-brainer, really. I think. What do you think? It sounds like it's common sense at this point.
Well, it does, but I think for someone who's just coming to this term, psychological safety, it can sound a little bit like, oh, what else am I going to have to do to make sure that everyone feels happy? And we are going to go on to the whole fluff and snowflake stuff in a second. So if you're still not convinced, don't worry, that's coming. But I think, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And the fact that Google is doing it, as you say, data-driven tech company, very forward-thinking, used to be and possibly still are brilliant in the leadership area. It just goes to show that this is something which we all really should be listening to.
Absolutely. And if you're still not clear on how psychological safety can impact behavior and in turn, organizational outcomes, Stefan has a great example.
I'm a nurse and I see on the chart for this, in this case, it was in a neonatal intensive care unit. So there's a child, an infant, a baby. And on the chart, it says, you know, administer this amount of drug, this type of drug in this amount. And you think the dose is wrong. So it's 2 a.m, you know, you're the midnight shift and you think, I really got to call the doctor. So you call the doctor and says, you know, stay in your lane. Just follow the orders on the chart and that's that. So the next time that comes around, what do? Do you notice the error on the chart or the potential mistake? And do you call that doctor again? No, because you got reamed out last time. So that's one case where psychological safety affected my ability to be able to pick up the phone and call you. And there's a potential life or death situation. And why that matters is because how often are there mistakes happening in your work environment where you want to know about those mistakes because you can then do something about it. And another similar study looked at the number of errors that were being reported in hospitals. And what they found is that teams that had the highest level of psychological safety reported more errors, not less. And that was counterintuitive, right? That was a study conducted by Amy Emmonson again. And she was expecting that the teams with the highest degree of psychological safety would have the fewest number of errors. And it was exactly the opposite. And it's because it's a reporting issue. If you have a high degree of psychological safety, you report the errors so you can fix them. And if you are in a low psychological safety environment, you hide them. So if you're a business owner, if you're a business leader, and you're not hearing about the issues that are happening in your business until it's too late, that's a problem. right? Like if your salespeople are finding out that your biggest customer is upset with you and they're just trying to, you know, cover it up and they don't want to admit that we might lose our biggest client, that's a problem. You need to find out about that right away. So that's the case for psychological safety. It's getting access to information to make better decisions. Ultimately, it's how groups of people learn so they can innovate, adapt, change, make things better.
So I have a question, Leah. This has just fired something off in my head. Do you think, you know, in House, the Hugh Laurie documentary.
Jesus, it's not documentary.
in House in the series, then I'm thinking based on that, that they had high psychological safety, but then the leader, did they have high psychological? Because what I'm thinking is on one hand, he basically sat down to do the differential diagnosis with everyone. So they're like, right, we want your ideas. Yet almost every idea was thrown back and going, that's stupid. So what was the situation there?
I think House is a really interesting case study to use for lots of different things. I think you're right. I think there is an element of psychological safety there, because the thing is that there was, you know, if mistakes were made, House knew about it. House was the first person to know about it, or if something wasn't working, he was the first person to know about it. So I think there was psychological safety. And I think what's probably been quite interesting, if you kind of mapped that journey of those, I think those two main teams, weren't there in House? Those two main teams of doctors over the course of the series, I would imagine that you'd start to see more and more those junior members, other junior doctors starting to question House and throw back a similar level of shade and you're wrong. And I think that's what you... It's probably a good example, a very, very weird example, but very good example of nurturing psychological safety in terms of it only works if we can all question each other, whether I'm the leader or whether I'm the most junior person of staff in the organization. Everyone has an equal voice.
And it just so happens that House is a sarcastic bastard. So he will shoot you down, but you know that he wants you to question that.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Okay, so, but we can't just say, all right, we now have a culture of psychological safety. Let's hear it. Can you?
I mean, not really. I think it does kind of start with that very clear intention and communicating that clear intention with your employees. But even, you know, using that silly example of how psychological safety is something that's nurtured and will build over time. It's not just, as we've said, it's, and again, House is a good example. It's not just about getting that feedback. It's also important how you respond to it and respond to it in the right way, as Stefan explains.
Oh, well, if I share this, is that going to reflect poorly on me? My colleagues aren't reporting these issues. Maybe, why would I? Why should I? Then I'm going to seem like the whistleblower, right? These are all of the impacts that we might be perceiving to our reputations if we share certain pieces of information. And I think that's often, you know, the fact that you just pointed that out is really critical to point out, is that that's what's causing people to withhold information, is like, how is this going to affect me? And so that's why, as a business owner or business leader, you need to make sure that you are setting the tone for what information needs to be shared, and then you need to be responding in a productive way. So if what you're asking is, okay, I need to know when there are mistakes, and then you ream someone out when they share a mistake, that's not going to get you that behavior again in the future. So you have to respond productively. And also another way that folks might share information is maybe there's a chat or some sort of Slack channel where people can just kind of air their issues. And if you just ignore them, like so you're giving the ability to share, but then you do nothing with that information, how you respond is as important as kind of the system you set up for gathering the information in the first place.
So I think there's a couple of really great takeaways here from Stefan that I just want to expand on a little bit. I think, you know, he said that the first thing is to really you know, thinking about how you respond to this. If you fly off the handle, if you send out an angry email and copy in every single member of the team, that's not going to foster feelings of psychological safety. So, you know, you really do have to take your ego out of it. You need to decide ahead of time how you're going to respond to various levels of mistake, because the minute you lose your shit, psychological safety just isn't going to work. And I think secondly, you know, as Stefan said, if you're not going to do anything with this feedback, with these ideas, suggestions, you are better doing nothing at all. Do not open that can of worms. That is going to, you know, I mean, psychological safety then becomes irrelevant. But in terms of employee engagement and well-being, you're just going to have a more negative impact. So if you're not in the position to ask for this feedback and act on it, and by acting, I'm not saying implement every idea, but respond to every idea, then it's not going to work.
I love this taking your ego out of it. I think that is the key to almost anything in business, whether it's sales, marketing, ideation, leadership, HR, anything like that. Taking your ego out of it is really, really smart. Okay, so hopefully we've made a case for why it's important and why you should be considering this, and why you should be implementing it in your organization. So let's get on to some practical stuff. So how do we actually do this?
Yeah, the first thing you want to do is thank people for contributing. And then seek understanding. So as a leader, you want to make sure that you have your curiosity hat on, if you will. Don't assume you absolutely know what they're trying to say. So sometimes it will be fairly clear, but then other times you might have additional questions, or don't assume you know exactly what the person is trying to aim for. What we advocate is for managers and leaders to be really curious about what people are contributing, because that makes them really feel heard, right? And understood and appreciated. And if you give people the time of day, they're going to start to give you more and more information openly, right? Because it's going to feel more comfortable. They're going to feel more trust. And that trust is a currency within business, right? The more people trust you because you're willing to listen, the more they're willing to share and give you insights or information that they're possessing in their between their 2 ears.
I think what I love most about what Stefan said there is, you know, leaders putting on their curious hat, you know, leading with curiosity. And why I like that, I think it's a really common trait within, you know, leaders, particularly owner-led businesses. They're usually very curious. They've usually built their business because of a curiosity of doing something differently or, you know, changing how, you know, the status quo. It's that same mentality, you know, how could we do things better? And what I love is that by applying that same mindset that you leverage to build your business, you're going to embrace this concept of psychological safety and really help your employees to contribute in the best possible way to continually, you know, push the envelope. So let's bring this idea, this concept to life a little bit more, and let's hear from Stefan again.
For sure. I think there's many good examples of organizations that do psychological safety well. I can think of one organization that's made it a real top priority for them, and they're in the finance industry. And so what's a priority for them, especially among their investment team, is getting really good information, because they make decisions about what companies to invest in. They want to make sure that even if there's one dissenting voice in a room of a dozen, that dissenting voice is heard. So they're creating an environment where all of those folks are able to share their information. Now, that's not a simple task. Like, I think the idea of what they want to have, which is complete information for decision-making, is really, really clear. What is hard about it is that these folks, by and large, are looking at investments and making decisions, and they are basically being paid for their knowledge. And so they don't want to look stupid. They don't want to look like they're uninformed. They want to be making decisions on complete information. And so if there's some sort of like, I'm not so sure. And I'm not even sure how to fully articulate why, but I have an intuition, you know, my sense is this industry operates in this way. And this company's a little bit different than all the other companies in the industry. And here's why. And like, maybe they can't fully articulate why they're thinking, oh, I'm not so sure. I'm a little bit hesitant about this as a buy. They might not say anything. So, again, they've been able to put in place some systems and really group norms by setting a certain agenda. Like, so, okay, for these meetings, here's how we're going to run this meeting. We want to hear everybody's, you know, top three reasons for, top three reasons against, and we want you to think about it ahead of time because this week we're going to be reviewing companies A, B, C, and D, right? So they're giving people, they're knowing their tendencies and accommodating the agenda of the meeting to allow people to have that time to want to invest the time and energy to be articulate with their responses.
I think that's actually a really good approach to give teams this agenda, this expectation ahead of time, not only for different personalities and thinkers, but also as a way of, you know, saying we're so committed to this that we are giving you time to come up with why we're wrong about this. It really cements that through. And I think, you know, another way to do it could be, you know, again, you're relying on individuals with that to feel comfortable. Create teams or create working groups with a set agenda. You four are for this idea. You four are against this idea. It doesn't matter how you individually feel. Use the information to come up with the pros and cons as you can see them. Yeah, I think it's a really, really cool technique. And just to pick up on something else that Stefan said there as well, you know, and this, I think this sums it up brilliantly, is all of this, everything about gathering data within your organization on employee engagement, well-being, how people are thinking and feeling, is to give you the full information, the full picture you need to make decisions within your business. If you're not quite ready to kind of, you know, make this big change in your business and put it all out there, think about doing, you know, asking for some kind of anonymous feedback or some kind of survey that we've talked about before on the podcast. Sometimes that can be a good place to start to understand what the current climate is within your business to then make bolder moves that Stefan is talking about.
So clearly the biggest impact on psychological safety is the leader.
Psychological safety is a team-based construct. And so you're going to have pockets where psychological safety is going to be high and pockets where psychological safety is going to be low and everything in between. And what we find really tends to influence psychological safety is the leadership, starting at the top, but then also leaders within certain departments. So certain leaders and managers will cause psychological safety to go down or up, depending on their skills, their abilities to manage their team and manage psychological safety. So are there organizations that uniformly have low psychological safety across the board? I think if you look at the top and you look at who's leading those organizations, that's probably going to be the best indication.
So here's a question, Leanne, and I'm sure a lot of listeners are saying this out loud. What happens if you start hearing things you don't really want to hear?
You will hear things you don't want to hear. You know, it's just the way things are. Nothing is 100% perfect. And also, if people aren't questioning things, then they're not innovating, they're not creating, and they're not driving the change and performance within your business that you need. So you are going to hear things you don't want to hear. But yeah, as I said earlier, it is like opening a can of worms. This is what Stefan thinks.
Yeah, I think what you're pointing to is the anxiety we might have as business leaders to, if I ask the question and I get an answer, I now need to deal with it, right? Yeah, I think that's a question you want to ask yourself. Are you willing and able to do that? And maybe there's some areas that you're willing to explore with your staff and others where you're not. Like there's some matters that you want to fully decide. Like you're the business owner, you're the business leader, maybe you're the divisional leader. Like you're going to make the call. Like at the end of the day, it is a business, and usually businesses require one person to make the call. And so we're not saying you have to honor every piece of input, right? Because remember, gathering information from your staff is not about agreeing with them. It's about giving them a voice and making them feel like what they have to say matters. And the more you can do that, the more engaged they're going to be, the more likely they are to really lean into their work and not just, okay, well, boss told me to do this, I guess I'll do it, even though I think it's a terrible idea, right? So if you can think about engagement, psychological safety is a means for facilitating high levels of engagement. And lower levels of engagement are going to be facilitated when there's less psychological safety, when folks are not, their voice doesn't matter. So that, I think that's a simple way of thinking about it. Do you want to get the best out of your people? Then you want to foster psychological safety and their input and make their voice matter.
A quick podcast recommendation for you. If you haven't listened to Content is Profit with the amazing Louise and Fonzie Kamecha recently, then you're missing out on great guests, crazy hosts, and the secret behind something they call the frictionless sale. If you're anything like me, you're not really going to get on with those sales, bro, woof, kind of podcasts. And, you know, if that's the case, then these guys are a refreshing change for you.
One of the episodes I listened to recently was How to Outsmart Google in 2024. If you publish anything on the interwebs, then you know you need to rank on Google. Their guest, Jason Barnard, talks you through all the secrets you need to know to outsmart Google this year. Listen to Content is Profit wherever you get your podcasts.
A client said to me once when we were kind of new in our relationship and in the project and starting to explore kind of employee voice and psychological safety. And they said to me, you know, but Leanne, we're running a business, not a democracy. And I was like, yes, but you're also running a business, not a dictatorship. Like you can have, you know, we're not saying, as Stefan said, that you're giving over complete control to your employees or you have to do everything they say. That's not the point. You know, business leaders, you can set boundaries. You can, you know, to the kind of input that you want, what your expectations are, manage employees' expectations in terms of what you're going to do with it. You don't have an obligation to accept every piece of feedback and then action it. It's more about facilitating that discussion. And if someone gives you an idea, you know, it's as simple as saying, I love that. That's such a great idea. I'm not sure it's going to work for the business right now because of this specific reason, but let's pick that up in 3 months' time and see where we're at. It's facilitating that discussion. It's that adult-to-adult conversation.
So let's just play devil's avocado for a moment then here. So what would you say to business owners who are telling you that this is just fluff? This is for the snowflakes out there who need to feel safe.
I mean, I'd probably just tell them that they're wrong, but I think, Stefan's got my back on this one.
Psychological fluff. What makes it different is that it's not fluff, it's science. There's science backing this. There is data, there's evidence, and we know it matters. And so one of the things that we're looking to do is we're conducting a study right now because we're focusing a lot of our training on those interpersonal skills. It's how to be curious, how to ask an open-ended question, how to reflect back to someone that you really understand them. Because so often what we know is that big organizations are starting to look for leaders that have great listening skills. Yeah, but how do you assess that? And how do you teach that? Because most people, I'm guessing 90% of people think they're in the top 10% of listeners, right? We all think we're good listeners, but are we? And so we focus on those interpersonal skills. And we often focus on what are called soft skills. And we think that's a misnomer. They're not soft skills. They're hard skills. You can measure them. We can assess them through a performance task. And we get folks to respond to those stimulus videos by recording their response. What would they say in the room? So it's not a hypothetical. They actually record what they would say. And we can assess those. We have behavior specialists, interpersonal skills experts who can code the responses to say, to look for 8 skills that we know are correlating with good positive outcomes. And so these are not soft skills. These are hard skills and they can be learned.
Here. This isn't fluff. This is the science of human behavior. Do you know what is fluff, Al?
No.
Myers-Briggs. Do you know what else is fluff?
Go on.
Recruiting for Culture Fit. And one more. Do you want a third one?
Yes, go ahead.
Sushi Feckin' Fridays. That is fluff. We have empirical evidence backing up psychological safety. And when it's done right, businesses will measure the impact for themselves. If you're, do me a favor, if you're embarking on any people and culture intervention, whatever it is, take a snapshot of your performance before that intervention starts. I'm talking revenue, profitability, customer satisfaction, employee engagement, well-being, productivity, any data points you have, any metrics on performance you have within your business, take a snapshot before that intervention. Then once that intervention is finished, 6 months later, take that snapshot again. If your performance hasn't increased in the areas you expected it to, that intervention hasn't worked. Maybe that intervention was fluff. Maybe it was executed badly. If you are doing this right, if you are using the science of people within your business right, you will see tangible, measurable impacts on your performance.
Brilliant. Okay, well said. So let's assume that someone does do all that. Someone listening says, yeah, I'm going to do this. They implement everything that Stefan and you have talked about. We fast forward 6 months. How do they know that it's working?
What characterizes an environment with high degree of psychological safety? It's people speaking up, right? And so what's the opposite of that? It's quietness, or what I might call politeness. So if everyone's just really polite and you know, no one's willing to say the uncomfortable thing, then that's a sign that you have a lower level of psychological safety. I think the misconception is that if I'm a leader, if people are kind of agreeing with me and everything seems okay, that everyone's happy and everyone, you know, all is good. And that a true sign of a low workplace environment is one where people are fighting with each other, you know, openly calling each other names kind of thing. And that's not the case. So instead we see that low levels of psychological safety are environments where just people are not speaking up, or they're just being polite. They're agreeing with you all the time. And you're never, you know, a classic example is in a meeting. If you're sitting there and you say, okay, I think we should do this, folks. What do you think about this idea? And everyone just goes, yeah, sure, let's do that. You want to empower your people to be able to speak up and say, that's good. It's a 7 out of 10. What would make it a 10 out of 10 is this.
And for most people who've started a business because they see the commercial opportunity, an entrepreneur, then they're not necessarily schooled in leading. And I think that a lot of people, and I've fallen this trap myself, is that you sit there and you think, because nobody's saying anything, it's a good idea. And you think, I keep coming up with these great ideas, don't I? And then, you know, 6 weeks down the line when it hasn't worked, you're like, well, why didn't that work? And then someone pipes up and goes, well, because the software doesn't really support that kind of thing, or, you know, that sort of idea. So I think this is such an important thing to remember, is that you might feel that everything's okay because people aren't disagreeing with you. That could actually be the worst thing.
100%. And I think, you know, there's some little things that you can look out for, and maybe just sit and reflect now on your business that I've experienced as a leader, and it has been a red flag, and I've run towards it and tried to understand it better. Things like, as you know, as I said, presenting ideas and getting no pushback. Red flag. Presenting an idea and getting venomous pushback, but from the same person that always gives you pushback. Red flag. Listen, do you know what? I need to sit down and have a coffee with that person, because clearly they've got some ideas that I need to hear. And I think finally, just that, I mean, there's a balance between always feeling like you're fighting fires. But if you're in a position where you're not fighting any fires, everything is going smoothly and brilliantly, red flag. There's a fire. It's just no one's called 999, right? There's a fire.
This is so interesting, because I think the classic, as I just mentioned before, the natural feeling is, oh, everything's okay. So can we go into some tangible, you know how I like a list of things, and ideally they've got three on them. Can we maybe go into like three or four steps of what someone does after they finish listening to this, what they can do to implement this in their workplace?
Yes, I think step one, understand that people want to be heard.
Yeah, there's facilitating a discussion for sure. And also, you know, people just want to be understood and heard. So it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. I want one thing, you want the other. How are we going to meet in the middle? Or you know, it certainly does facilitate a discussion. And I think so often people want to just be feel heard. And as long as they feel heard and appreciated, they're more likely to acquiesce, if you will, or more likely to acquiesce. Because if you look at research around conflict resolution, often it starts with demonstrating understanding. Why? Because if you understand what the other person really wants, then they're more likely to want to understand what you want. That's a good way to make negotiations happen, right? You're more likely to get to a yes when you demonstrate, you lead by showing understanding. Oh, okay. I get what you really want. You really want this, 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 and that. Okay. Well, let me tell you what I really want. I want this. And they're more likely to hear now because I heard them first.
Again, adult to adult conversation. I hear so many business leaders say that they're craving this within their organization, but this adult to adult conversation does mean relinquishing a little bit of control, which can be hard when you've built a business from the ground up. So yeah, step one, understand that people want to be heard and that they do have valuable contributions to make. With that in mind, step two, be curious when someone does speak up.
Yeah, the first thing you want to do is thank people for contributing and then seek understanding. So as a leader, you want to make sure that you have your curiosity hat on, if you will. Don't assume you absolutely know what they're trying to say.
And then of course, step three, measure it. This is not fluff. This is not intangible. This is the science of people. Measure it.
You know, we offer folks a free team assessment. It's super quick and easy. Amy Edmondson's survey that she developed is 7 questions. So it's been robustly tested and it works to measure psychological safety in a team-based environment. And it takes 3 minutes for everybody to answer the questions. So we could administer the assessment. And then what it produces for us is a report. We get a report and we use that as a conversation starter with teams. This is a starting point. Okay, here's the psychological safety on this team. Let's talk about it. How do we get this score? Why is it 7 out of 10 instead of 9 out of 10? And then we can ask the question of, okay, well, what could we do about it? So that's the first thing is let's just measure it. Let's get a baseline measure so that we can influence it. That which you can measure, you can change.
And finally, have a think about what might be stopping people from speaking up. I've mentioned this before and I'll continue to bang on about it. One of the most important things you can do as a leader is engage in reflective practice. What is going well? What isn't? What could be stopping people from feeling comfortable to speak up?
The second thing is, as a leader, what you want to be thinking about is what might be causing people to withhold information. And when I say withhold, I don't mean in like a like an intentional way, like what's causing them to not want to speak up, I guess. And just be attuned to it and be attuned to it for yourself. Like, are there uncomfortable bits of feedback that you feel like you want to say to some of your staff members or team members, and you're just not saying it? Like, what if someone's quality of work is not there? Are you willing and able to go up to them and say, this is not good enough? This needs to be better and here's how. Or are you maybe a little bit too agreeable and you're saying, yeah, this is pretty good. Okay, thanks. You know, so you want to make sure that you yourself are speaking up and you're noticing when you're not and what's causing that. So notice it in yourself and then notice it in your team. Notice, oh man, she's not saying anything right now. I wonder if it's because so-and-so just made a kind of a judgy comment. Interesting. So just start noticing.
Okay, so these 4 steps. Step one, understand that people want to be heard. Step number 2, be curious when someone speaks up. Seek clarification. Don't assume you know. Step 3, measure it. And we talked about Stefan's measuring tool, which we'll link to. And step 4 is think about what's stopping people from speaking up in the first place. So are we saying this is all coming from the leader, Leah?
everything comes from the leader. Honestly, as a business leader, the responsibility on your shoulders is great. But realizing that does kind of make it a bit lighter. You know, everything you do, every move you make has impact on your team, on their engagement, on their well-being, on their performance. There is no room in this world for lazy leadership. There's a great book called The Promises of Giants by John Amici, and he explains this really beautifully in terms of kind of the impact and moves you make. So if you are a new leader, a new manager, if you are starting a business, if you're 10 years in and want some inspiration, I will link that in the show notes because it brilliantly explains how everything comes back to the leader, but that's okay. We've got this. So I asked Stephen, our expert on psychological safety, does he agree? Does the leader set the tone?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. I think the leader sets the tone. The belief that one has or the perception that one has about the degree to which there is psychological safety in their team is almost like a sum total of all of the interactions that have happened up until today, up until this moment. So all the Slack messages, emails, you know, one-on-one conversations, team conversations, all of that is going to inform me on how safe it is to speak up in this environment. What comes out of all of those emails and communications are norms. Norms are really powerful. And we as humans, maybe Leanne, you have that experience of going to a new job. And what do you do when you get into a new job? Quickly, you're like, okay, if I have an issue, who do I ask? How do I ask them? Do I just send them an email? Can I, there's all these social norms that exist that aren't necessarily explicitly written down, but they're driving our behavior. And we want to fit into those norms. That's like culturally, that's generally how we want to operate. And it usually starts with the core values of business. Like, for example, if you're all about diversity or you're all about transparency, you know, that's one of your core values, transparency. And then you as a leader, you're kind of withholding information. What are the people going to say? They're going to say, oh, we're not all about transparency. We're actually about transparency with an asterisk beside it. We're transparent to a degree. And then not more, right? Or if it's all about diversity, and then when new ideas are offered, you shut them down or you don't quite honor them, or maybe you're not making any action to really bring in, try to represent a broader diverse set of people within your culture, people are going to know we're not really about diversity. So you want to state your values and then really honor them and make sure that all of your actions are congruent with them so that you're reinforcing those values again and again. And people within your organization are going to say, okay, yeah, we are all about transparency. And I can tell it's not just lip service. It's through our actions and our words every day.
Oh, this is so important what Stephen is saying here. Having values does not make an authentic leader. Living those values, role modeling those values, and consistently. Employees will put up with a bad manager, a bad leader for much, much longer than they will an inconsistent leader. That incongruence just causes so much stress. We've talked about neuroscience before. It's just that threat state is induced. So yeah, if you don't worry about being a good leader or a bad leader, worry about being a consistent leader.
This is gold. I love that. People will put up with a bad leader longer than they'll put up with an inconsistent leader. That is a fantastic way to finish it. So let's just talk quickly about some resources. So if you got this far, then I'm hoping you've enjoyed it. So we have a couple of ideas if you want to learn a bit more. Where does Stefan suggest to start, Leanne?
Let's hear from Stefan.
So Google Project Aristotle. And that is that's the research project that Google conducted to answer the question, what makes an effective team? And they have some really useful resources on there that describes what they did in their research study, but they also have some worksheets that as a team lead, you can use to facilitate discussions in your team.
Stefan has also very kindly offered a free consultation to anyone listening to the Truth, Lies and Workplace Culture podcast. Which is an incredibly generous offer and well worth taking up. So let's hear a bit more about what Stefan is offering our lovely listeners.
We generally spend an hour to maybe even 2 hours debriefing the results with the team to help establish what that baseline is and then create a bit of an action plan for you moving forward. And so I'd love to do that with any team. It's gratis, you know, it's on me. And I'm unattached to the results there. Obviously, I want to work with organizations and teams. And if there's a good fit there, great. But I'm really honestly happy to work with the team, help them take that very first step of instilling psychological safety within their organization. And then we'll part ways. I'm totally okay with that.
So, I mean, what he's talking about here is he'll do this for free for you. You've obviously got this far and you realize that he knows what he's talking about. So definitely take him up on this, I think.
Yeah, I think it really shows, a lot about a practitioner who is so passionate about what they do and also so confident that it's going to work that they'll offer that first step for free. I would jump on this. And I should say is now as well, there's no kickback for us. We're not being paid by Stefan or here to promote his stuff. It's just mutual respect and admiration for each other's work. So definitely take him up on that offer. You can head over, we'll put it all in the show notes, but you can head over to zarango.com, that's zarango.com, and that will take you through to the website, Stefan's website, and there's a link on that page that you can book a consultation. Some other great resources as well there that Stefan mentioned. We will leave links to Amy Edmondson's book and her TEDx talks, and for all my fellow academics and psychologists out there, or people that just like to read a good scientific journal of an evening over a glass of wine, there's a Google Scholar link for Amy Edmondson as well. I think so many great resources. I love that Stefan is standing behind his work and his belief. Psychological safety, it is one of those, another people and culture term, but one that I think is really worth paying attention to. So I think we should end on Stefan and that passion for psychological safety and some final words of wisdom as to why it matters and the impact it can have, not only on you as a leader, but on your employees and the performance of your business.
You don't want to just make a profitable business, but a business that gives the folks that are inside your walls a voice. And that's what I'm really about. I know that 70% or maybe more of people are simply punching the clock. They don't feel like their voice matters at work. And I want to change that. I want people to be able to go to work and feel like what they have to contribute matters. And they're actively moving the world forward. Because ultimately, if that other 70% of people who are showing up to work every day can feel more like they're contributing, we're going to solve the world's biggest problems. We're just going to do that.
I love that. And if you'd like to hear more about Stefan and his work, we will also leave a link to his LinkedIn profile in the show notes.
Fabulous. So thank you, Stefan, for joining us this week. If you've enjoyed this, then please, I tell you what would be really, really useful is if you were to leave a review for us on your favorite. I mean, iTunes is probably the best one, but anything that you use, leave a review for us. Hopefully it'll be 5 stars because that's really going to help us share the episode and just tell 1,000 of your closest friends, really, because we're fairly early on in our podcast journey with this particular podcast. And we're kind of proud of it. We want more people to hear it, don't we?
We are. It really helps other people find the podcast if you write a review, fancy subscribing, then it will pop into your downloads every week. But thank you to everyone who has listened so far. And we look forward to bringing you another episode next week.
Definitely. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.